The Great American Eclipse is coming April 8th over the United States. It's a prophetic sign from the heavens that war is coming this year to America. Previous total solar eclipses happened during the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the Vietnam War. Find out what's coming to America in the new book, America at War 2024 by Pastor Mark Biltz. Order from Amazon or from ESM.us. On sale now.
The El Conservador Radio Show is sponsored by the Federation for American Immigration Reform and George Rodriguez on 930 AM, The Answer. Time for the El Conservador Radio Show with George Rodriguez. George is a constitutional conservative who loves to expose fake news and liberals. Be a part of the show. Call 210-308-8867. And now, El Conservador, George Rodriguez.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio, deep in the heart of South Texas. Welcome to the show, my friends, on this March 30th, 2024, the last weekend of March. I'm hoping that everybody out there is having a wonderful Easter weekend. Let us remember the purpose of this season, my friends, the resurrection of our Lord Christ. That's what it's all about. Let's remember that. Okay, let's get into the... We've got a lot of news for you, my friends. And you're going to have to forgive me for me going off a little bit. I am very, very angry with the Mexican president, López Obrador. His recent remarks are shameless and absolutely ridiculous. Before I do that, let me tell you who our guests are, and then I'll talk a little bit about that. Our first guest is Mr. Randy Clark, a regular contributor to our program. Randy Clark is the border reporter for Breitbart, stationed in Eagle Pass and Del Rio. And he's going to be chatting with us, giving us an update of what is going on down there. Then we have Sheriff Alan Castleberry, a very good friend of mine. Sheriff Castleberry is the sheriff of Kimball County, Texas, which is about 100 miles west of San Antonio. And he's going to be talking about the impact of SB 4, what he has been facing with illegal immigration in his county, which is not on the border, and what he anticipates with SB 4. Then we have Miss Tori Branham. Tori is a very good friend also. She is from Georgia. I asked her to please give us an update about what is going on in Georgia with regards to the state legislature trying to address the issue of illegal alien criminals. And so she's going to be chatting with us. Our final guest, a very good friend, very, very smart gentleman, Mr. Brent Smith, who is the attorney for Kenney County and here in Texas, about 150 miles west of us. They are on the border, and he is kind of like the Paul Revere of the border crisis in Texas. He has been the one that has raised the alarm. I lay it all at his feet. He is the man that raised the alarm, got everybody knowledgeable and informed. And he has done a great job. He's going to be chatting also about SB4. So those are our guests. So let me talk to you real quick about López Obrador. First of all, he made some ridiculous demands some shameless demands of our government, and I'm hoping that the Biden administration, although I have no real hope, but I'm hoping that they don't fall into his trap. But he has demanded, get this, $20 billion for poor countries in Latin America and Caribbean. He has demanded that. He has also demanded that the sanctions on Venezuela and the embargo on Cuba be raised, okay? He has also demanded that the legalization of millions of Mexicans, illegal alien Mexicans, that are living in the United States, that they be legalized, okay? He wants Mexicans that are legalized in the United States, that are illegally in the United States, legalized. Go figure. He also lectured to the Biden administration, to the American people, about the drug problem, and it said that it's because the United States is immoral. Figure that. This from a country where everybody takes a bribe, where the bribe is something that is acceptable. It is normal. It is part of the world. It's outrageous. Then, my friends, not only did he lecture to us and he wanted and he made these demands, then there was the situation when the tragic collapse of the bridge in Baltimore, and apparently several of the bodies that were found were Mexican and Salvadoran. And then he goes on to a lecture and say that it is Mexicans and Latinos, illegal alien Mexicans and Latinos, although I'm not sure how he knew that they were. That hasn't been determined yet, but that they're the ones that do the work at night, and so therefore they are the ones that should be legalized immediately. This man is nuts. This man is absolutely nuts, and we should shut him down in some form or fashion. How? By shutting the border, and let's see what he does, okay? So I it really, really angers me that this tin horn dictator, this polyester socialist, would lecture to us. Absolutely outrageous. Well, okay. I got that out of my system. Thank you for joining us, my friends. I want to thank FAIR, our sponsor, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, for being so courteous and to sponsor us. Without further ado, let's go to our first guest. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you. And we've got our good friend, Mr. Randy Martin Clark, from Breitbart, reporter for Breitbart on the border. I wanted to get him on and chat a little bit about the incident that occurred last week in El Paso, where the illegal aliens rushed the border and got in. Some of them got in. And any result from it. Randy, thank you for taking time to be with us, buddy.
You're welcome, George. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Tell us what you can about this incident in El Paso and any other news that you've got for us and updates.
Well, it's something I think that was foreseeable. We know that Mexico's taken some actions to get migrants off of that train system, the one they refer to as La Bestia. Those trains are coming in with 30, 40 migrants on them when they used to have thousands. INAMI, which is Mexico's immigration arm, they're actually finding migrants inside the train cars that you can't see on the roofs. And I think we all remember the images. So they can only carry that out for so long before the migrants just become so restless that they're going to eventually get tired of waiting. What we've heard is in southern Mexico, a lot of them are waiting for CBP-1 applications to go through so that they can actually walk across a bridge. So this was foreseeable. We know we had several hundred rush the National Guard. Those barriers, you know, they will serve a purpose as long as there's a consequence on the other side. Those soldiers are best suited for the battlefield if they don't have good orders on what their authorities are if they do have somebody breach that wire. And what we know is Joe Biden is responsible for imposing those consequences, and he refuses to do that. So basically, these migrants got what they wanted. They got past the barrier. They got past the National Guard. They turned themselves into the federal government, and the bulk, according to my sources, were released into the United States to pursue asylum claims. So that's gonna continue. 20 hours ago, we started seeing caravans start to build. We haven't heard of any caravans in southern Mexico. There's one of 2,000, and that's basically in protest of being held in southern Mexico. So what we saw in El Paso is going to repeat itself in the days and weeks to come as the migrants get restless and tire of the Mexican efforts to keep them off of that train. They'll find other ways here.
So are we, I mean, should we brace ourselves then, because we're going to be seeing more of these mass rushes at the border and people successfully getting in? It's not going to be enough that they're swimming across in a constant trickle. Now they're going to rush the border and force themselves in. Is that going to become the normal, do you think?
I think that's what we're going to see. I put out an exclusive story this morning. We just broke a million migrant apprehensions just along the southwest border. That doesn't include anything happening on the northern border, anything happening in coastal waterways, none of the Haitians coming in towards Florida. It doesn't count any of that. Just what we're seeing on the southwest border. Texas is down because of that train, because of Mexico's effort for that train. Texas is down, but we're seeing San Diego and Arizona, they're up. So we are on pace really where we were last year. Nothing has changed. There's a 50,000 difference between last year and this year at this time in the first 6 months. So we're on pace to have a 2 million year again. You know, in the climate of Joe Biden, that's the climate change driving the migration. It's the climate of Joe Biden. So we're seeing that climate remain the same that he has set through lack of enforcing the law. But we are going to see more of this. We're going to see if they let go of that train and they finally get on it, we'll see what we saw a few short months ago. If not, we're going to see the continuation of rising in Arizona and California, and we'll see incidents like this in Texas, whether it be Eagle Pass, Brownsville, or El Paso. You're going to see more of this somewhere as this frustration builds.
The rest of the situation, I mean, the number of the violence between cartels and by cartels along the on the other side of the border in Mexico, AMLO, or should I say the president of Mexico, López Obrador, made the comment on 60 Minutes that he was not going to be the policeman for the United States on immigration. However, he doesn't seem to be the policeman for Mexico either, as these cartels are now using mines, I believe, to fight each other.
Well, you know, they are engaged in all kinds of activity, from extortion to kidnapping to pushing fentanyl to smuggling migrants to just violence against their own citizens, innocent civilians. AMLO will do anything that the United States pressures him to do. So it doesn't matter what he says. If you remember prior to Trump taking office, he said he would not be the United States arm of the immigration service either. But yet he was during Remain in Mexico. He was during Title 42, because if this government chooses to exercise some diplomacy that's in their best interest, Mexico will do almost anything we ask of them. They can be a great partner. So AMLO doesn't want to fight the cartels, and we are not forcing him to. If we had a president and we had an administration that cared to, AMLO would be our law enforcement arm, like he was our immigration arm under the last administration. He's free to say whatever he wants. He has no inclination to battle these cartels. He said so up front. And he won't, so long as we don't pressure him. In this administration, they could have, going back to the El Paso situation, they were free to have prosecuted every one of those migrants that stormed through and stormed over the National Guard soldiers. We could have prosecuted those with assault charges. We could have prosecuted them for illegal entry. And on the federal side, chose not to. So that tells you both administrations on both sides of the border are as weak as we have ever seen.
Is there any other news that you could share with us regarding the border that we need to hear about, that we need to cover?
Well, you know, we know that we broke that million migrant record just yesterday. We know that we're going to continue to see those big numbers. We still have that ongoing battle over Texas immigration law, so there's plenty going on right now. So I think we're going to have some good updates coming soon. And unfortunately, it's probably not going to be good news, George.
Wow. Incredible. So the last question for you, I guess, is what's the state of the situation in what is the situation in Eagle Pass and in Del Rio regarding the Abbott's efforts to keep the wire and to discourage people from crossing there? Does that seem to be working?
It seems to be working very well as far as, you know, what we've seen really in Mexico's efforts, because there it really is just scattered traffic. The whole sector of Del Rio, which was number one for most of the year last year, has seen about 300 to 500 apprehensions per day for the entire 210 miles of border. So, you know we've had some additional wire put up in Shelby Park, which is about 2.5 miles. It's extended more layers of that to Normandy. And so long as there's nobody hitting that river from on the Mexican side in great numbers, that wire will remain untouched. Once we start getting the thousands, if they return like we had in September and December, the wire is just going to be a minor obstacle. They will do what they did, what we saw them do in El Paso. They will trample right over that with garbage and whatever they can throw on it, and we'll see more of the same. So we're really seeing that slowdown continue. But my fear is, like I say, the migrants are growing restless, and they will find a way to the northern border, whether it is, you know, in Arizona or California, or spotted, scattered spots in Texas. They're coming.
Wow, incredible. Folks, we've been speaking with our good friend, Mr. Randy Clark from Breitbart. Randy, thank you very much for being with us as usual. We'll be reaching out to you some more to get an update of what is going on at the border, buddy. Thank you very much.
Awesome. Thank you, George. Have a wonderful day.
You too. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got my good friend, Sheriff Castleberry from Kimball County, Texas, which is just west of San Antonio. I wanted to get him on because Sheriff Castleberry is the sheriff over a county that is not directly on the border. And I wanted to ask him how SB 4, the new law that's got a lot of controversy, that's had a lot of controversy. In fact, right now it's on pause as we speak with the Supreme Court. I wanted to get him on and chat a little bit about what impact that law might have on him, on his county, because we've heard a lot about other counties. Here in San Antonio, we've got a sheriff who is a Democrat, and he has been screaming to high heaven that it's going to create all sorts of discriminatory situations and profiling and whatnot. I want to get somebody who's got a level head. So, Sheriff Castleberry, thank you very much for coming to San Antonio to be with us. Welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you for having me back.
Let's chat. Tell us, first of all, tell me your understanding of the law and how you think you're going to be able to implement it in your county.
Well, my understanding of the Senate Bill 4 is that if somebody is here in this country illegally, you actually have to see them cross other than the port of entry for that law to even be in effect. And most where it's going to be most effective would be in your border communities.
It's the way that I've heard it explained to me is that it's a border security law, not an immigration status law, that, again, it is aimed at people who are sneaking into the country, let's put it in those terms, that are sneaking into the country or sneaking something into the country.
Yes.
And by definition, you know, if you're going to sneak in, you probably either have something or hide or you should be hiding. So somebody that's caught or intercepted at that point will be susceptible to the law, I guess, right?
Yes, that's my understanding.
And the situation, well, for example, the classic situation a few years ago, you stopped a car that had some illegal alien Chinese in it.
Yes, sir.
How do you think you'd handle it now under this law?
We would handle it pretty much the same way because, as I said, you have to know where they came across at. Mm-hmm. And being 90 miles from the border, we're not going to know that. I mean, it's just not going to happen unless they say, hey, we crossed at such and such crossing.
Unless they admitted that.
Unless they admit it.
Gotcha. And what about turning them over to the Border Patrol? I mean, will you still follow the same process or procedure?
Yes, sir. We'll still follow the same process, continue what we're doing, work hand-in-hand with Border Patrol, and continue that working relationship.
The situation also with housing these folks, if you do detain them, you know, for whatever reason, even as you are detaining folks right now, is that causing a hardship for a county as small as yours?
It can. I have a 19-bed facility. Part of it was built in the 1800s, and the other part was 1973. When we pick up these people, there could be 10 in a vehicle. The process is we contact Border Patrol. Border Patrol speaks to them, and they advise us we're going to place detainers on these people. And then we bring them and hold them for the Border Patrol till they can come get them. If they can't, we transport them to their office for further investigation.
Now, the Border Patrol housing them themselves, I would imagine that the Border Patrol facilities themselves are overrun. Is there ever any situation where they ask, you know, we can't hold them, and what do you do then?
If they ask us, I mean, if they ask us to hold them, that they can't come get them or they're over their limit, that detainer will hold them until such time. Mm-hmm. And then they'll call me and say, hey, we can come pick them up, or could you bring them to us?
Gotcha.
And we'll do it.
So you still would end up holding them until they come and get them at that point?
Yes, sir.
Now, that's under the law, you know, if you find out that they've crossed illegally, or if they haven't really committed another crime other than being in the United States illegally. What about when they are criminals, like situations where you do catch somebody that has committed a crime or is committed a crime?
Well, in essence, what happens if they're here, if they're in this country illegally and they commit a crime, we contact Border Patrol and get a detainer on them. Mm-hmm. That person will go through the court process, and if the person is convicted, whatever that person is sentenced to, then say the person is sentenced to state prison, he'll go to state prison, but that detainer will follow him or her. And once the sentence has been completed, then immigration will come and pick them up and return them to whichever country they came from.
Do you see any big headaches with this law for local law enforcement? Do you see any big headaches that you're still working out the details or trying to figure out how you're going to handle it?
Yeah, one of the there's a couple of them. Number one is when a magistrate asks, they'll tell him, if you want to stay here, we're going to file a criminal charge, but you can go back voluntarily, and the sheriff will take you to the nearest port of entry. Mm. Okay, with that being done, said, we get them up there to the port of entry. They decide they don't want to go. That kind of puts things in a bind. So, and then you've got your magistration form.
Are you going to make them go back across, particularly when you've got the president of Mexico says, we don't want you over here either?
Yes, sir. So, and then you have your magistration paperwork that has to be done. That's got to be worked through, and the wording on the magistrate forms, how are we going to account for these? Because if they come back a second time, it's a felony. So how is that going to work?
Yep. I guess the other aspect of it, or the other concern, should I say, that is very, very much vocalized by folks that are against this law, is that it's going to create a situation where law enforcement is going to be looking for people that look like migrants, specifically that they're going to be racially profiling Latinos. Your thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, it's a violation of state law to profile. It's a Class A misdemeanor.
Minor detail.
Yes. I know in my county, we don't racially profile, period. I mean, you don't do that. And there's a lot of factors that come into play, like identification. Right. Okay. And there's some factors there. Do you have a Texas driver's license or a driver's license or ID? Mm-hmm. Okay. Some of the folks have got the temporary ones. Okay. That means that they're here, supposed to be here.
Yeah.
But we're not going to go out and say, hey, come here. I think you're...
Let me check you.
No. It's going to be a traffic stop. It's going to be a call for service, or, you know, a suspicious person.
Right.
Something like that. We're not.
There's got to be a reason why...
There's got to be a reason. We're not going to just go out there and say, hey, you come here.
Yeah.
Not going to do that.
You got it. Sheriff, one last thing. This situation of SB4, it's on hold right now. When and if it goes into effect, do you think that local law enforcement is going to need some assistance, particularly along the border, since there really doesn't seem to be any kind of end to the number of people coming across, legally or illegally?
Yes, sir. we're going to need some help.
Yep.
I mean, there's not enough of us around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, take, for instance, what happened in El Paso.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah, there's not. I mean, you've got X amount of people standing at the port of entry, and they get overrun. You're not going to be able to catch them all.
That's right.
It's just near impossible.
That's right. Folks, we've been speaking with my good friend, Sheriff Castleberry from Kimball County, Texas, Junction, Texas, just west of San Antonio, about 100 miles west of us. I thank you very, very much, Sheriff, for taking time to drive to San Antonio and to be with us again. We've got to get you back on again and chat some more about what is going on, particularly in the rural communities in Texas and in other communities, the rural communities, what's happening regarding the border crisis.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common-sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to fairus.org.
Howdy, 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 folks. Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got our guest today has been on our show before. She is a young lady who is, she runs her own firearms instruction in Georgia. She lives in Georgia, and she runs a Middle Georgia Female Firearms. She's an instructor. She's also running for District 20 Georgia State Senate. How about that? So let's welcome my good friend, Ms. Tori Rogers. Tori, thank you very much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you for having me.
Let me begin. Since you're involved in firearms training, let me ask you about the news that came out this past week regarding an Illinois federal district judge who ruled that an illegal alien that had been stopped with a firearm because he was not a felon, because he was he had no criminal record, and because he was not involved in criminal activity, that illegal aliens can now keep firearms, that they are protected by the Second Amendment. You, as a firearms instructor and somebody who is very, very involved in the Second Amendment, what are your thoughts about that?
Well, first of all, it happened in Little Village neighborhood of Chicago, which Illinois in itself is not constitutional carry. So they have laws where you have to obtain a weapons carry license. You can't just possess a firearm without going through the proper channels. You have to be 21, not a felon, and obviously pass the background check to get the weapons carry license to have your gun in your house, car. Your car is an extension of your property. Your hotel room's an extension of your property. So they pulled him over, but he should still be charged under Title 18 because that's a criminal code. And you know, undocumented individuals are not supposed to possess firearms or ammunition. And so she is essentially wrong on many levels, not just with the state law, but with federal law in itself, because they're not a constitutional carry state. So she was fundamentally wrong on many levels.
You know, this situation with extending constitutional coverage to illegal aliens, it seems to be quite a trend among liberal judges right now. I mean, they seem to be extending all sorts of, I mean, in some places they want to extend voter protection so that they can vote. In other places, health and education. Now, here in Texas, they are allowed to get free public education. Where is this leading us, do you think?
Well, The crazy part about it is her excuse is that he hasn't had any new arrests or outstanding warrants. since he was released from jail. Oh my goodness, that still doesn't, he's illegal and he's already committed a crime. No, and, you know, bringing illegal immigrants in, and then they're ending up, you know, every state in the city right now is a border state and a border town. And essentially, the more people that come in, they're building up the census. And so it's going to change the way the electorates fall. The Biden administration knows this. And most of the people coming over are men in their 20s. You have, I mean, there's just so many problems with it, and it's trickling down to local communities. And you saw that with the Lake and Riley in Athens, who was killed by an illegal immigrant. His brother was pulled over, had the cop checked with Homeland Security. It wasn't even a real green card. He had actually worked for a few days in the dining hall at University of Georgia. The mayor of Athens is not supposed, you know, we're not supposed to have any sanctuary cities in our state. They passed a law in 2009, but our politicians continue to go against the very laws that they create. And they deny it, and they don't want to talk about it. And that's a big issue with everyone right now, especially with it being election season, is the border crisis.
Let me ask you, now that you brought it up, since we're talking about the issue of illegal alien criminals, what's the status? What is going on in Georgia right now with regards to the murder of Lincoln Riley? Is the state Senate, or is the state, or the state legislature, the governor, how are they reacting with it, to this tragedy?
I haven't heard any reaction at all. What I heard was that he obtained a lawyer, and the lawyer said, "We want to see footage. We want to see proof." And he's requesting a jury trial in the case. Now, her dad made his first statement since her death and said, "If he hadn't been here illegally, my daughter would still be alive." So I haven't heard any big officials, but I know that there have been. I spoke at a rally in Athens after Lakin was killed, and several of us gave a speech in the Makes Athens Safe rally. But the higher-ups really aren't doing a whole lot. It's the citizens that are sick of it, and they're starting to bring awareness. I mean, they want the mayor of Athens gone. He basically got up there when they were, you know, he was supposed to be talking about the tragic death of Lakin Riley, one of Georgia's own daughters, and the only thing he wanted to elaborate on was treating the migrants with dignity and respect. He missed the whole point.
That sounds like President Biden apologizing for using the term illegal when talking about the migrants. How bad is the illegal alien problem in Georgia?
Oh, it's bad to the point, the town that I live in, the police chief checked on a hotel that had illegals in it, and he didn't call and check their green card to make sure that they were real. He just gave them 40 days to get out. But I see groups and groups of them all the time working, and I'm willing to say they probably don't have a worker visa.
Yeah.
And they're not supposed to be here. But I see it all the time.
It's really amazing to me how many illegal aliens are now now called Georgia their home. I mean, it's amazing to me. I've seen figures that as many as 500,000 to 1.2 million are living in Georgia at this point.
Well, there was a new senator, Colton Moore, who videotaped illegal immigrants coming into the Atlanta airport, and he was basically ousted from the Republican Party in the state capitol because he exposed that video.
Wow.
There's just so much corruption, and it's going to take the few honest people we have left to get this under control to save our country. I was pleased to see that the SCOTUS shot down where Biden was suing the state of Texas for allowing local law enforcement to arrest people that they thought were illegal. The SCOTUS said, no, we're going to let Texas continue to do what they do. So that was good news.
Yeah, that's a major victory for us. We're very, very major. Happy about that. Tori, we're going to let you go, but thank you very much for taking time to be with us. Tell the folks, do you still have a podcast that you do?
No, I don't, but I do post a lot on my Middle Georgia Female Firearms Training Facebook page, and yes. Then I have Tori for District 20 Senate in Georgia. So those are two places that I post information.
Wonderful, wonderful. Folks, we've been speaking with my good friend, Ms. Tori Rogers from Georgia. And keep up the good work, keep up the fight, and we'll be reaching out to you again for more information, for more news items.
Okay, thank you.
Once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio.
Okay.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Once again, my friends, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. And we've got our good friend, County Attorney Brent Smith from Kinney County. And I turned to Brent because Brent was the first gentleman that actually started putting together the information, the legalese outline for the defense of the border, of the Texas border. And he's been the initiator, and he's kind of like the godfather I look at for this whole situation. So I wanted to ask him about SB4. What is going on with SB4? How? Where is it at? Tell us. Explain to us what's going on.
You know, George, I've been called a lot of things in this border crisis, but the godfather is probably a new one.
Well,
you know, so this SB4 bill is pretty complicated on what was going on, but I'm going to try to just kind of, you know, break it down and speak in layman terms per se. So, you know, this law, before it was even effective, it was challenged by several people, some NGOs, or not NGOs necessarily, nonprofit groups and DHS, and they brought it into a court in Austin, a very liberal federal district court in Austin, which we knew was probably going to be ruling against us no matter what. It's the same court that ruled against the buoys and everything else. And so that district court put a full injunction in place on the law. And normally when a court looks at a law, they see certain parts of it that are unconstitutional or might be unconstitutional, or, you know, it's very rare that they say this entire law is unconstitutional, because in the law, the statute itself, the text of it says if any parts of this law are found to be unconstitutional, then the rest are deemed constitutional. So it could be effective partially, if that makes sense. This district court in Austin just said, oh, the whole thing's unconstitutional. You can't do any of that stuff. And so, yeah, and it was the injunction is something that the court tells you cannot do something. You know, it doesn't allow you to take a certain action. And this injunction is what we're going to be talking about the whole time. It comes back to this injunction, which doesn't allow the state of Texas to implement this law. All right, so that ruling occurred. They then appealed that, the state of Texas appealed that ruling on the injunction to the Fifth Circuit. And what the Fifth Circuit did is they have these things called an administrative stay. And what that is, it's a court docketing tool. Like, they get, you know, a lot of different appeals. When they get an appeal, instead of ruling on it right off the bat on the merits, on the arguments of the case, they'll sometimes give an administrative stay, which means we're just putting a hold on ruling on this case, and in the meantime, it's frozen in place while we consider the merits of it. And what the Fifth Circuit is a group, I think it's 23 or 24 judges make up the Fifth Circuit. And every time they hear a case, there's three judges randomly assigned to each case that goes up. And when I say randomly, I'm pretty sure it's randomly. Like, it's just the luck of the draw which three judges you get. And so this appeal board got this motion from the state, and they put an administrative stay on it, just pausing it in order to give the merits panel, which is another three set of judges, time to review the case and decide what they're going to do with it. So it was kind of just an administrative stay to freeze it until they had time to look at it more. Well, when they did this administrative stay, that what that means is that stay is a pause on the injunction. So we're saying Texas, for now, can enforce SB4, and that injunction that was issued by the district court is paused for now until we get to review this case further to decide where we're going to rule on it. And so when that occurred, it was good news. But DHS then appealed it to the Supreme Court of the United States. And so the Supreme Court put a temporary stay on the Fifth Circuit administrative stay for a few days.
That's where it gets deep for us.
Yes. Yeah. So what they basically, you know, honestly, I think the Supreme Court didn't know what to do with it, because what they did is they put a temporary stay. Let me just change the word stay. They put a pause on the Fifth Circuit stay that prevented the injunction going through. They basically said, just hold on. let the injunction be in effect. Let's block SB4 while we consider this. And the reason the Supreme Court of the United States, if you remember, they did three of these temporary stays or temporary pauses. They did one, I think, for 7 days. They came back and did one for maybe 9 days. I could be totally wrong the days. Then they did a third one for an indefinite time, which didn't have a day limit on it. And what they were doing is trying to consider what they were going to do with this appeal of an administrative stay from the Fifth Circuit. Because the reason they were kind of confused, I think, from looking at their opinion, an administrative stay is, like I said, like a court docketing tool. It's nothing that's done on the merits of a case. And normally the Supreme Court doesn't get appeals of administrative stays. The Supreme Court has rarely ever considered whether or not an administrative stay is valid or not. But in this case, they got an appeal of this administrative stay from the Fifth Circuit. They didn't know, like, well, how do we treat this? We don't usually get these. I think one justice said, we're not in the business of considering emergencies and administrative stays. So it's something the Supreme Court doesn't deal with. Never has.
Okay.
And so the Supreme Court decided, you know what? We're going to lift our own stay, the Supreme Court's, because we don't deal with this, and it's going back to the Fifth Circuit. So when the Supreme Court did that, it allowed the Fifth Circuit stay on that injunction to take effect, basically meaning SB4 would go back into effect. Gotcha. And which, you know, everyone's like, it's a great victory, and it was a victory per se, but it was not done on the merits of the case. It was more of a Supreme Court precedent or tradition of not considering administrative stays.
Gotcha.
So I know that's a mouthful, but it's
so the bottom line at this point is that it was back in play again, that the law was allowable at that point.
Right. But one thing that's interesting, right now, while we're on the Supreme Court, one thing that is interesting is the three liberal justices on the Supreme Court dissented from that decision, saying that, you know, by doing this, we're going to allow the unconstitutional law. You know, the three liberal justices were totally against this because of the law. The other justices were for it. Now, it wasn't necessarily based on the merits of the case, but some people are saying that might be a preview of the Supreme Court on how they would treat this case if it got to there. So, or not if, when it gets to them, because it inevitably will. Now, I don't know how much stock we can put in that decision, but it is telling that the three liberal justices dissented to that. So anyway, back to the story, it goes back to the Fifth Circuit. And so now SB4 is effective because their administrative stay on that injunction that was placed by the district court is in effect again. Well, the merits panel that I mentioned earlier, the ones that review the appeals, that is another set of three different judges, not the original Fifth Circuit judges that granted the stay, but the ones that are going to hear the actual merits of the case. They lifted their own stay on that injunction, meaning the injunction is now in effect, and they did that later than that night of the Supreme Court. And so what that kind of tells you is that there were two different sets of Fifth Circuit justices that consider this stay on the injunction, I guess, if you will. For the first three that granted it at the very beginning seemed to be pretty positive. And then this next set, the three that we're talking about now, I don't think they're as friendly to the state of Texas as the first set. And like I said, it's a luck of the draw which three you get. And so what they did is that, you know, they basically said, you know, the injunction that the district court originally put in place is now back into effect, and we're ordering that we have oral arguments on the merits of the case the next day, which was, I believe that was, I got my days confused now, I think that was Wednesday or Thursday, they had oral arguments in front of the Fifth Circuit about the SB4 case. Like, the oral arguments are done. In fact, I was listening to them earlier. And so, you know, I think the outlook of these three Fifth Circuit judges ruling in the state's favor probably aren't great, but I could be wrong. I don't think they're great, though, just because of the actions they've already taken on it. So what's going to happen is they heard the oral arguments, and they're going to come out with a ruling whether they're going to grant the state of Texas a pause or stay in that injunction And this one will be more permanent while the case is litigated. This won't be another administrative stay. This will be a stay during the duration of the appeal. And so if I had to guess, that ruling would probably come out tonight or sometime next week. And now let's say that they rule against the state of Texas and they don't grant us a stay. And so that injunction will be in place still. Texas then has two options. They can request an en banc hearing, which they call an en banc hearing, meaning they request a hearing in front of all 25 or however many Fifth Circuit judges there are, like the whole panel, a full set of judges, to hear it again. Because more than likely, the Fifth Circuit is pretty conservative overall. And so Texas could request that for a rehearing, or they could appeal the decision of these three judges to the Supreme Court to get a ruling on whether the Fifth Circuit was right on not granting them a stay. Hmm. So those are the two options. Or they can do both. They can request an en banc hearing in front of the whole Fifth Circuit, and if they lose that, then they appeal it to the Supreme Court. But the long and short of it, George, is it's going to be some time until we have a definite answer. Because even if we win in the Fifth Circuit, say we get a ruling in favor of Texas tomorrow, you know, DHS is going to appeal it to the Supreme Court.
Right.
So either way, it's going to the Supreme Court. And now the timing of that, who knows? It might be a while.
Yeah, and thus, we don't have, you know, a firm action that we can say that will happen until the Supreme Court rules on it. However, what do you see the chances? I mean, obviously we're looking at it as conservatives, you and I, but still, on its merits, I mean, shouldn't it be obvious, particularly after Thursday's attack on the border guards?
Yeah, well, you know, I think this goes back to a problem we're all having, I think. And there are many people, even conservatives, they're getting confused between two things, George. They're getting confused between immigration and border security.
Yes.
Those are two different things. People that point to the Arizona case from the Supreme Court, that is a purely immigration issue. Border security, which involves a state, a sovereign state, being able to protect its citizens and enforce the sovereignty of its own border, is one thing. Doing immigration and applying immigration law is another. And I think, and even if in the AG's attorney general's arguments, you know, I think they're even trying to confuse it a little bit. They, you know, I would suggest they stick to constitutional arguments on state sovereignty. Because there's a set of laws that apply to one, and there's a different set of laws that apply to the other.
Gotcha. Right.
And so
exactly.
That's where people are making a mistake.
That's very, very good. That's a very good explanation because obviously immigration is a federal issue, but border security, that is not only a federal issue, it's a state issue.
Exactly, George. Yeah. Yes, exactly. And, you know, like the state of Texas, SB4, we're not trying to get immigration where we're implementing immigration laws. We're trying to say if you want to come in the state of Texas, you can go through the port of entry. The immigration policies and laws that are being enacted are happening at the port of entry. We're not trying to stop that. We're just saying if you come into the state, you need to go through the port of entry so we know everyone that comes in the state, who they are, and do they mean us harm.
Exactly.
And that's that.
That's a very good explanation there. That is very good. That is very good. Brent, we're going to let you go, but thank you very, very much. Folks, we've been speaking with our good friend. He's informing us, educating us. Brent Smith, who is the county, he is the county attorney for Kenney County, which is, in my opinion, kind of like the Lexington of the whole border crisis immigration issue. I mean, they were the ones that fired the shot, and they have been leading the charge. So, Brent, thank you very much for taking time to be with us as usual, buddy.
No problem, George. I appreciate it.
You got it. Folks, once again, George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio. Once again, my friends, thank you for joining us. I want to thank our sponsor, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, FAIR. If you want to know anything about what is going on with the issue of the border crisis and immigration policy coming out of Washington, D.C., the laws, the regulations, the battles, the political battles that are going on, FAIR is the one that you need to turn to. Go to fairus.org. Again, FairUS.org. Support Fair with donations. They, in turn, support El Conservador. Please, please, please support us. I want to once again thank our guests, Mr. Randy Clark from Breitbart, Sheriff Alan Castleberry from Kimball County, Texas, Tori Branham from Middle Georgia Female Firearms. Tori is great. And Brent Smith, attorney for Kenny County. He's a great friend. I really have so much respect for him. I want to thank them for joining us on our show today. Folks, once again, we have got to wake our friends and neighbors up, particularly in the larger communities. The impact of illegal immigration is now being felt not just at the border, but in our communities, in our backyards. We have got to do something. The taxes are going to go up. It's going to impact on our schools. Illegal alien children are going to be in it. Yes, and I'm using the term illegal alien. Not migrants, not newcomers. Illegal aliens. We don't know if these people will qualify for any type of citizenship. And if citizenship is rewarded, like, for example, in an amnesty form, that is rewarding illegal immigration. That is absolutely rewarding illegal immigration. I also feel that we've got to start dealing strongly with the Mexican government, particularly with López Obrador. His lecturing of us, his attitude and blackmailing America over immigration is unconscionable. Without I thank you, my friends. Thank you for joining us. I want to invite you to our show next week. Same time, same station. George Rodriguez, El Conservador, talking to you from San Antonio.
The Federation for American Immigration Reform, known as FAIR, fights to restore common sense border controls and immigration policies that work for America and its future. America's immigration system and border controls have been decimated by Washington politicians and special interests, undermining the interests and security of the American people. FAIR mobilizes grassroots activists to make sure the voices of the American people are heard in Washington. Find out more about FAIR and what we do by going to FairUS.org.
The Great American Eclipse is coming April 8th over the United States. It's a prophetic sign from the heavens that war is coming this year to America. Previous total solar eclipses happened during the Revolutionary War, the Civil War, the Vietnam War. Find out what's coming to America in the new book, America at War 2024 by Pastor Mark Biltz. Order from Amazon or from ESM.us. On sale now.